On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake. Find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, producing tonight's show. Jason High, his first time behind the keys, doing a great job here for us as we are heading into the third and final hour of our program here on this Thursday, May 29th, as we get set for Royals baseball tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday as they host the Detroit Tigers at Kauffman Stadium. And for those interested, if you haven't bought tickets already and you'd like to, or if you are planning on being at the game tomorrow, Big Slick Weekend in Kansas City this week. So tomorrow afternoon, prior to the game, they're going to have the, you know, the celebrity softball game. That one's going to be a ton of fun. I'm actually going to be at the game tomorrow night. Looking forward to it. My wife and I are taking my mother and father-in-law. We took them a couple weeks ago for like a Mother's Day thing. We took them to the Red Sox game. And I'm going to tell her, I'm going to tell this story because it's her fault. We were at the game. We're sitting there watching it. It's 0-0, fourth inning. And my wife decides that we're going to get up and we're going to walk around the stadium. We went with my mother and father-in-law, my niece and nephew, and my brother and sister-in-law. And my niece and nephew were over on like by the little K, right, doing all the little kids stuff. And they were up on the playground and doing the merry-go-round and all that stuff. And we went over there to see what they were doing. And within minutes of us getting up out of our seats and taking our focus away from the game, that was when Lugo gave up the two home runs. And the Royals end up losing 2-0, and I blame her. So hopefully we don't see anything like that tomorrow. But we're going to be at the game, Big Slick tomorrow, and you know, some of the usual suspects will be there. You've got some of the big guests that are lined up include Philip Bowen. You've got Q from Impractical Jokers. Pat Mahomes is expected to be there. Kurt Menefee, Kevin Pollock. Will Forte will be there once again. Fortune Feimster is going to be a part of the lineup. This year, Kevin Rahm, James Murray, also from Impractical Jokers, is expected to be there. Johnny Knoxville. That's an interesting one. I wasn't expecting Johnny Knoxville to be in attendance. So yeah, there's going to be some fun ones that are going to be out at the K for the celebrity softball and all the, you know, the events over the weekend. But more importantly is the game tomorrow. Casey Mize against Seth Lugo. Boy, that one's going to be, that's an intriguing pitching matchup if I've ever seen it. Mize has an ERA under 3 this year, and you got Lugo, who is just over 3, fresh off of a runner-up Cy Young appearance from a year ago. Saturday, it's going to be Waka against Tarik Skubal, and then Sunday is Bubich against Keiter Montero, and Montero is far and away the worst starting pitcher of this weekend series. He's got an ERA up near 5. Everybody else has an ERA under 3.5. That's how good the starting pitching is going to be in this series against the Tigers. And a big one at that, obviously, it always is when an AL Central rival comes to town. In other Kansas City related news, you've got Chiefs OTAs, which just concluded. And, you know, some interesting stories coming out of Kansas City. The first one is Josh Simmons. He went through OTAs this week, but he was limited. He went through individual work, but he didn't do any 7-on-7, 9-on-9, or 11-on-11 team stuff. And that was the expectation going in. The expectation is that over the next few weeks of OTAs, he still won't go through team workouts and things of that nature, team drills. But Andy Reid, during his press conference this week, did say that the plan is still for him to be full go for training camp, which I think kind of goes hand in hand with the report we got last week. And whether we haven't really got any confirmation whatsoever from the Chiefs as an organization, but report came out last week that the thought is, according to sources within the Chiefs organization, that he's going to be the starter at left tackle, which honestly kind of surprises me. When he was initially drafted, I was like, okay, he won't play this year. And then it was like, okay, he'll be a backup and, you know, we'll play some snaps if necessary. If an injury occurs to Moore, Juwan Taylor, then, yeah, okay, he can slide in and start. To, well, maybe he could start the back half of the year. To now it's like, he's healthy. He can start game one. Whoa. My only thing with that is, you tried that last year with Kingsley. This is a first-round pick instead of a second-round pick. Not that that should make any semblance of difference. You know, it was a late first round pick versus an early second. There's like 5-6 picks of difference between the two. Anyway, if he's going to be your guy on week one, in my view, he has to be your guy week 17. He has to be. You mishandled Kingsley Suamataia's situation last year. And I think that you took away an opportunity for him that you didn't give him a chance to work through it. You didn't give him a chance to go through the bumps and the bruises and take his lumps and improve as a player. You're like, okay, he's struggling. We're trying to win a Super Bowl. Yank. Which I get it, because you're trying to win a Super Bowl. You're not a developmental organization at this point. You're a team that's trying to win Lombardis year after year after year. As long as 15's behind the center, that's what you're going to have to do. But for the sake of Kingsley Suamataia, he should have been left in there for the sake of his own development. You can't do that now again with Josh Simmons. If he's the guy week one, he's your starting left tackle. He has to be. And Moore is a backup left tackle, and he's learning right tackle, because then he becomes your starting right tackle a year from now when Juwan Taylor inevitably gets cut, because they're not going to pay him another $24, $25 million a year like they've done the last couple of seasons and like they will this season. So that was one of the first stories that came out of OTAs. The second, and this is one that, honest to God, I could not care less about. I am not buying it. It happens every year with somebody. Reports coming out of OTAs, Sky Moore looks different. Apparently, Sky Moore has come into camp much more muscular. I guess he's put on weight. He's put on muscle. He's done this. He's done that. They're like, he has the physique more of a running back than a wide receiver. I'm sorry, Sky Moore. I don't care. I don't care what you look like on the field. I care about your production on the field. And so far, it has been next to nothing.
This seems kind of like one of those baseball spring training stories, right? He's in the best shape of his life,
always,
right?
Dude, there's always that. There's always one, right? I mean, how many times are we going to have to do this song and dance with Sky Moore or Justin Ross? I'm seeing reports about Tyquan Thornton right now, former first-round pick of the Patriots out of Baylor. The Patriots cut him, and they had no wide receivers to speak of. And they still cut him. Is he fast? Yeah, he is lightning quick. Pairs really well with Xavier Worthy and Hollywood and Rasheed and Jalen Royals and what they want to do with the, you know, bringing back the Legion of Zoom. I'm not buying it. And I'm not buying Sky Moore coming in looking much more physically, you know, with a much more physical presence at the wide receiver position. I don't care if he looks like Calvin Johnson. Can he catch the football? Can he generate yards after said catch? Can he make catches in traffic? Can he be a competent route runner? That's what I need to see, and so far I haven't. I'm still of the opinion that I don't think Sky Moore makes the 53-man this year. I think he's out of a job by the time we reach week one. When I look at Hollywood and Worthy and Rashee Rice, and they brought back Juju Smith-Schuster, and you drafted Jalen Royals in the fourth round, I think there's more upside with Tyquan Thornton. I don't see it. I do not see Sky Moore being a part of this team in September.
And hopefully part of that, right, is because there isn't a lot of opportunity for him, right? Because you've got Rashee Rice coming back off injury, and then you know, we'll see the suspension, obviously. Xavier Worthy had a really strong rookie year. You hope he'll build off of that. We're hoping that we don't really need Sky Moore, right, even if he was your fifth or sixth receiver.
Yeah, that's maybe the only way that Sky Moore holds on to a job for a little bit longer is they need another wide receiver on the 53-man during Rashee Rice's suspension. That might be the only way. I don't see him being a guy that gives you consistent snaps and consistent production at wide receiver. He's had ample opportunity. He had a 2-year stretch there, the worst wide receiver cores that Mahomes has ever had during his time in Kansas City, and he still couldn't find time on the field with any sort of regularity. I'm not buying it. I'm not. A couple of stories surrounding Patrick Mahomes. The first one, he was asked about the Olympic flag football decision and that the NFL is going to allow players to compete in 2028 in Olympic flag football. He was asked if he would consider it. He said, quote, "Leave it to the younger guys." And by the time they reach that point in 2028, Mahomes will be 32 years old, right? Let Lamar do it. Let Jalen Hurts do it. Let CJ Stroud do it. Let Caleb Williams do it. Like, why? Would it be cool? Yeah, right? Mahomes adds a gold medal to his collection. That would be kind of neat, but he doesn't need it. He doesn't. It's good for the league to allow these NFL guys to go and do it. And overall, I think it's good for the sport of football to allow it. But it doesn't do Patrick Mahomes any good. The other story, Mahomes was asked about Rashee Rice and what he's looked like coming off the injury. He did not participate in OTAs today. It's a voluntary workouts, and so guys kind of come and go as their schedule allows it. Rashee did not participate today, apparently dealing with an illness that's been floating around the facility. That's kept a lot of guys out this week. But Mahomes was very, very upbeat about Rashee Rice. Said that he has looked really good this year. You know, going so far as to sort of kind of in a roundabout way, say he looks like he did last year prior to the injury. Like, he's looked that good. He, you know, very, very confident in what Rashee Rice can bring the Kansas City Chiefs this year, which I think is a welcome sign. Again, you just mentioned it earlier, Jason, the suspension that's looming. How long will that be? Is it going to be 4 games? Is it going to be 6 games? You know, I'm somewhere in that area. I've seen some people say 8 games. I've seen some people say 2 or 3. I think 4 to 6 seems applicable for his situation, but we'll have to wait and see how this one inevitably plays out. But Rashee Rice will miss a little bit of time this year. How much? That's to be determined. But that's some of the latest news out of OTAs for the Kansas City Chiefs. They'll pick back up week 2 of OTAs next week as we just creep closer, closer, and closer. And closer to the kickoff week 1 of the regular season for the Kansas City Chiefs as they try to do something pretty unprecedented in trying to get back to a 4th straight Super Bowl and try to win 3 out of 4. We shall see. Logan Weber here with you, Jason High alongside producing tonight's program. You're listening to After Hours on your home for Kansas City sports. It's 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Game 5 Eastern Conference Finals, and right now, Knicks are seeing if they can push this thing to a 6th game. New York up 61-48 over Indiana right now, but anybody who's paid attention to the NBA playoffs so far or paid any attention to the Indiana Pacers knows that it doesn't matter what the score is until the clock hits zeros with this Indiana Pacers team. They have had several monumental comebacks so far in this postseason run, as the Knicks hold a double-digit lead at the moment. Hasn't been a great shooting night for the Pacers. They're up under 39% from the floor. Tyrese Halliburton has 6 points and just 3 assists in this game. Andrew Nimhard is 2 of 6. Miles Turner has only put up 2 shots, mostly because he's dealt with some foul trouble in this game. Aaron Nesmith has put up a 1-for-4 line, and Pascal Siakam 3-for-9. Meanwhile, it has been a big-time performance from the two-man crew of Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns for the Knicks, as they've combined for 39 points so far in this game on 16 of 24 shooting thus far. They are a combined 4-for-6 from behind the arc. So the Knicks hold a 14-point lead as of right now, according to ESPN's latest stats, 64-50. But is it going to matter? That's the question that I want to pose right now, and that's what I want to discuss. Does it really matter? Does anybody give a damn who wins the Eastern Conference Finals at this point? Because it appears, based on what we just saw in the last week in the Western Conference, and based on whatever the stats are going to tell you coming into the NBA Finals, the Oklahoma City Thunder are the best team in basketball. They are completely and utterly unreal. They got back-to-back blowout wins against the Timberwolves, Game 1, Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. They go on the road to Minnesota, and they get embarrassed. They lost by 42. And then they bounce back. They get a Game 4 win on the road by 2. They had to grit that one out, beating the Timberwolves 128-126. And then last night, they blew out the Minnesota Timberwolves 124-94, as Chet Holmgren scores 22. Shea had 34. Jalen Williams put up 19. You had Lou Dort put up 12 in this game. Isaiah Joe had 11 off the bench in this game. The Thunder outscored the Timberwolves 26-9. 26-9 in the first quarter. It was over from the word go. Just from the opening tip, Oklahoma City had it all going, and Minnesota could not find themselves at all. They were down 17 at the end of the first quarter. They were down 33 at halftime. At halftime, it was 65-32 at halftime. That's it. It's over. It was just an unbelievable whooping from beginning to end. The Timberwolves shot 41% from the field. Jaden McDaniels, 2-for-13. He scored 5 points. Anthony Edwards had 19 points on 18 shots. Really, Julius Randle's the only guy that showed up for Minnesota last night. He had 24 on 8-of-14 from the floor. And then they got contributions from the bench. You know, Terrence Shannon finished in double figures. Naz Reid finished in double figures as well. But too little too late, as the starters couldn't match any part of what the Thunder were bringing. So, in my view, I don't care if it's the Pacers. I don't care if the Knicks come back from down 3-1 and they win a Game 7 and they go to the NBA Finals. Nobody's beating this Thunder team.
The only real question with them coming into these playoffs were that they were so young, right? They were a young and experienced team, but everyone thought they were still the best team, and they've really dispelled that notion that they're not ready, right? They're ready. They look ready to me.
Yeah, they had no playoff experience, and yet they beat the most experienced team in these conference finals, because the same can be said, no experience for the Knicks and the Pacers. I mean, the Pacers had Pascal Siakam, who won an NBA title, right? He won a chip with Kawhi Leonard in Toronto all those years ago. But he's about the only guy that has like real legitimate playoff experience that you can hang your hat on for a guy that sees the floor with any kind of regularity. The Knicks and the Pacers outside of Siakam, they don't have anybody like that, right? Nesmith and Turner and Nimhard, Halliburton, Obi Toppin, Jairus Walker, TJ McConnell, Benedict Mathurin, Ben Shepherd for the Pacers. None of those other guys have been to this point, let alone to an NBA Finals. And then for the Knicks, Bridges, OG Anunoby, which I'm trying to think of how long OG Anunoby's been in the league. OG might have been on, I think OG Anunoby was on that NBA Finals team. So each of these teams kind of has like one guy with finals experience. And that's about it. So I don't know. I just look at the Knicks and or the Pacers versus the Thunder on paper. And from what I've seen in these playoffs, I don't think it's a good fit. Whoever comes out of the East, I think, is going to get embarrassed in the NBA Finals. The Thunder are so good. They're so talented top to bottom. They pass the ball well. They defend 1 through 5. You got Shea running the show, which is going to put a lot of pressure on Tyrese Halliburton. Possibly. Now, I have seen the Pacers a lot in this series against the Knicks, where they've put Nembhard on Jalen Brunson. I could definitely see the Pacers doing something like that against Shea, where you're trying to save some energy for Tyrese Halliburton by, say, hey, you know, you go stand in the corner and guard Lu Dort for 48 minutes, because Lu Dort doesn't exude a lot of energy offensively because he is a tremendous perimeter defender. So Lu Dort is a 3-and-D guy. Put Tyrese on him, limit the amount of, you know, endurance he has to put out on that side of the basketball. But I don't see Andrew Nembhard being able to hold down Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in a 7-game series. I look at this Thunder team, and I like the front court pairings that they have, right? Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein against either Pascal Siakam and Miles Turner, or against Karl Anthony Towns and a mixture of Mitchell Robinson or Josh Hart or Mikal Bridges or whoever you throw out there in the front court. I don't know. I think if the Pacers win this series, I think it's Thunder in 6. Honestly, if the Knicks win this series, I think it's Thunder in 5.
Well, and just going back to the experience factor for OKC, right? You know, they were not experienced coming into these playoffs, but it took them 7 games to take out Denver. So they had to already play an elimination game, even though they've been so dominant in the other games this postseason. So they're battle tested at this point. I don't think they're afraid of either the Knicks or Pacers, obviously.
The run that they've had to go through, I think, in this playoffs can be respected. You had to beat a Denver Nuggets team that has the best player on the planet. I know Shai just won the MVP. I don't want to hear about it. Nikola Jokic is the best player on the planet. In a team that, I mean, that collective group, pretty much all of those guys were a part of that NBA Finals team from a couple of years ago that won a title. So you have to, you take them into a 7-game series and you beat them. And then you beat a Timberwolves team that got to the Western Conference Finals a season ago. And many looked at them as the favorites before they ultimately fell to the Dallas Mavericks. I think that this Thunder team is so deep and so talented, and the scoring can come from so many different places, that they're the team to beat. They are absolutely the team to beat. 913-586-7965 is our number. If Cat is locked in and Brunson is scoring, Indiana probably won't be able to get a rally started. Yeah, probably not tonight. I mean, down 14 at the moment. The Knicks are right now taking control of this game. They've outscored Indiana in every quarter of this game thus far. But again, we watched the Pacers do this, right? We watched this in game one. We watched this in game four. This is just what they do. They just want to stay within striking distance, and then they find their opening. They take advantage of it. And all of a sudden, it goes from, oh, Pacers are dead to rights in this one, I guess we look forward to the next game, to, what do you mean the Pacers won again? They are the ultimate team where, like, it reaches a point, there's like 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They are the team where it's like, I can't turn my TV off. Right? They are the team that if you shut off the television set and say, I'm going to bed, you wake up in the morning and you see the ESPN notification and want to throw your phone across the room, because you're like, how in the hell did I miss that? That's what this Pacers team has become throughout this playoff run. It's fun to watch. It's a lot of fun to watch. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody in the text line said, this stadium debate is really showing how low IQ a lot of people are. Holy crap. Yeah, there were some takes during the course of the stadium debate. Hey, man, everybody's entitled to them. Everybody's got their own conversation. Everybody's got their own opinion about what's going on with the stadium. Mine is, I don't give a damn as long as they stay in the Metro. That's it. That's all I care about. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take a break, come back, and give you the final 30 minutes of tonight's program on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jason High, 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are rapidly approaching the start of the NFL season. Like, I know that it's May 29th, but the Chiefs just finished week one of OTAs. They got a couple more weeks coming up after that. Mini camp, training camp, preseason, and all of a sudden it's the NFL season. And it's funny that there never seems to be a bad time for anybody, whether that is, you know, the every fan, folks in the media, and whoever else, to make suggestions about what teams should do with certain players, right? Hey, you should trade for this guy, or hey, you should sign this guy in free agency, or this or that or the other. I saw this article from Sports Illustrated. The suggestion came from Jeremy Brenner of the Commanders on Sports Illustrated. So this is the Washington Commanders writer on SI. And the headline is, the Chiefs could sign former Commanders offensive lineman. He suggests that the Kansas City Chiefs should make a run at signing Brandon Scherff. Now, the original assertion came from Mo Moten of Bleacher Report. In case you're not super familiar with Brandon Scherff, Scherff is a longtime veteran of the National Football League. He's 33 years old. He was drafted in 2015. He was the fifth overall pick of the, at the time, Washington Redskins, and then became the Washington Football Team. Now they're the Commanders. In 2022, he signed a free agent deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars and recently was cut, as the Jags have attempted to offload pretty much all of their salary that isn't Trevor Lawrence. He is a five-time Pro Bowler. He was a first-team All-Pro selection back in 2020. And for the sake of everybody who was waiting for the other shoe to drop, yes, he played at Iowa. All right? Sue me. Played for the Hawks from 2010 to 2014. He was first team All Big Ten twice, Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year. He won the Outland Trophy as the best offensive lineman in college football.
Remind me where you went to school at, Logan?
Yeah, Iowa, University of Iowa. Yep. That's the one.
Thought I'd mention that.
Yep. I'm never going to not mention that to people. But he played tackle at Iowa. He was drafted fifth overall, played guard for pretty much his entire NFL career. If the money makes sense, okay, I guess I could see it. But I honestly, on the surface, I don't like the idea. Because again, we just talked about this earlier this hour with Kingsley Suamataia, right? If Josh Simmons is going to be your starter at left tackle week one, which there are some people, Adam Tyker, formerly of ESPN, said that last week, that there is belief that Josh Simmons could be the starter week one. If that's the case, he's got to be your starter all year. And the reason for that is because I think they mishandled a lot of what happened with Kingsley Suamataia. Well, now you've given him a fresh start, and you're taking Kingsley from left tackle to left guard, a position I think he can play very, very adequately and very well, in my opinion. I think he's suited for it at the NFL level, is that guard position. But you sign a guy like Brandon Scherff, and all of a sudden, those same wounds that he had to go through a season ago, opening the year as the starter, getting pulled, limiting his snaps, limiting his reps in practice, limiting his opportunities, and relegating him to a bench role, those wounds begin to surface a little bit more again, right? They reopen themselves ever so slightly of like, oh no, it's happening again. Like, oh no, if I mess up on this series, if I mess up on this play, are they going to pull me? Am I going to get benched again? And you can't play that way. Kingsley Suamataia, in my view, and maybe I'm more confident in him than others, I think he can be a very good left guard in this league. I think you have to let him do it. He's going to have his trouble along the way. That's the expectation. He's a young player. It happens. Josh Simmons is going to have his struggles. You have to let them struggle a little bit. We've watched this Chiefs team under Patrick Mahomes for 8 years now. That's a wild thing to think about. We're about to enter year number 9 of the Patrick Mahomes era. He'll turn 30 this year.
He's too old to play flag football, apparently.
I guess. God, I'm 27. I'm too old to play flag football. But I just think that who cares what it looks like in September? Who cares what it looks like in October? Who really cares what it looks like in November? We all care about what it looks like in December, January, and we all hope to God we see what it looks like in February. That's where we're at now. Kingsley Suamataia struggled in September, and they didn't give him an opportunity to be better in October, November, December, January, or February. You've made this move now. You said, hey, you're no longer a left tackle, you're a left guard, and we see you as a guy that can start at left guard. Oh, but wait, we're going to go sign Brandon Scherff real quick. It doesn't make any sense. I hate the idea of it. Scherff is a very, very good player and has been for a long time in this league. In fact, I saw, according to Pro Football Focus, last season at guard, Brandon Scherff played 625 pass blocking snaps. 625 pass blocking snaps. He gave up 0 sacks. Is he an obvious starter if you were to sign him? Yes. But for the long haul, for the overall development and understanding and I'm trying to find the right word, cohesion of the Chiefs in the future, I don't think it makes sense. Let a team like Baltimore or Indianapolis make a move for a guy like Brandon Scherff. Kingsley Suamataia should be the team's left guard this year and should be for the future as well.
Well, and on top of that, I know he didn't have the best Super Bowl performance, but Mike Caliendo is still on the roster, right? I mean, he did start for you in the postseason when you won an AFC championship. You know, it was really only after the Super Bowl performance that everyone really kind of realized, okay, maybe Caliendo's not the future, but you've still got him there as quality depth.
No question. No question. Yes, if you look at it, is Brandon Scherff going to be a better left guard next year than Kingsley Suamataia? Probably. Probably. And if that's what we're looking at, okay. But Scherff's going to be expensive. Even at 33 years old, he's going to cost you a good amount of money on the open market. Because there are other teams that are very, very interested in his services. And should be. He's a very talented player. But I'm concerned not about next season, because I think Kingsley will get better as the season progresses. And all he's got to be is good enough to protect Mahomes, right? You know, okay, you can't pass block for 6 seconds. Give me four. All right. Just give him enough time to get in, to enter a three step or a five step drop and hit one of those uber talented receivers or hit Kelsey or hit a running back out of the backfield. Let him work through it. By bringing a guy like Brandon Scherff, you are pretty much stripping that possibility from him. And I don't think that's the right call. You've already got a young tackle in Josh Simmons, who, if he is the starter, is going to have the possibility of Jalen Moore looming under him for the entirety of the season. You really want your starting left tackle and left guard playing under fear that one misstep, one mishap, one false start or hold, you know, one play where he doesn't quite get to his spot in time away from having his job taken? I don't like the idea of having that be the case for the left side of your offensive line. If it's going to be Josh Simmons, let it be Josh Simmons. And if it's going to be Kingsley, let it be Kingsley. I hate the idea of bringing Brandon Scherff in. As an Iowa fan, I don't like it for the future of this team and the integrity of the offensive line. I just don't. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up the show next. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Jason High, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan. You're listening to 96.5 The Fan from the Mission Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Studios.
.913-586-7965 is our number. Wrapping up this Thursday night edition of After Hours right here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber, you're hosting the show tonight alongside producer Jason High. I was talking a lot about the Pacers. It's never say never with the Indiana Pacers, but down 22 with 2 minutes to go in the third. Jalen Brunson's got a 30 piece. He's 11 of 16 from the floor. He is shooting the cover off the ball tonight. I think we might see a game six in the Eastern Conference Finals. I still lean towards the Pacers, however, winning the series. Just before the break, we had somebody in the text line comment in, say, how's Kelsey going to look this year? And I responded with, your guess might be as good as mine. But I have a hope. And my hope is that we see less of Travis Kelce in the regular season. And I know that sounds strange, but if we see less of Travis Kelce in the regular season, I think that that's more of a good thing than a bad thing for the Kansas City Chiefs. If we see Kelce catch 60, 70 passes and he has 700-800 yards and, six or seven or eight receiving touchdowns, that's an ideal season for Travis Kelce. The last thing I want to see is another year where Travis Kelce has 120, 130, 140 targets. He's just not built for that, I think, at this point in his career. I think he's less effective that way. By having that trio of Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and Rashee Rice, you can lean on them. That was the expectation last year, and then things went catastrophically wrong, right? Hollywood goes down in the preseason game, and Rashee has the knee injury early in the year. If Travis Kelce is a guy who has 80 targets, 70 catches for 800 yards and seven receiving touchdowns, that means, first and foremost, that Rashee, Xavier Worthy, and Hollywood Brown stayed out on the field. They gave you good snaps. They gave you good production. It also allows for Travis to be more Travis-like when you get into the playoffs. You allow 87 to turn into that dude when it comes postseason time. That's my expectation. I think that how he'll look this year is very questionable. But throughout the course of his career, he's always been the dude that showed up, and I think he'll continue to be that guy. Same person says, sounds like I missed Royals talk, but what's going to happen with Noah Cameron when Lugo and Reagans come back? What's going to happen? I couldn't tell you. What I hope happens, what should happen, at least in my opinion, as we wrap up the show here tonight, Noah Cameron should become your number five starter. And Michael Lorenzen should be taken out of the rotation. And one of three things happens. He gets traded, he gets moved to the bullpen, or he gets designated for assignment. I don't think the bullpen is that high a possibility only because of how good the bullpen has been this year. There's just too many arms and not enough room for another. A trade could be a possibility. He's been pretty serviceable throughout his career. What you'd get back in return, I'm not quite sure. Maybe you try to package it with a prospect or two and try to bring a bat over. I'm not entirely certain of that. DFA, it seems a bit strong for a guy of his caliber and where he's been at in his career and how good he was for the Royals when they traded for him last year from Texas. But that might be the most logical solution for Michael Lorenzen. I think Noah Cameron should never, ever go back to Omaha ever again. He's been that good. For our first-time producer in tonight's program, Jason High, a big thank you to you. I'm Logan Weber. Thank you guys for joining us and getting involved in the text line as always. That'll do it for After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. We out.
Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. On your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.